Iranians have to feel that the Americans and the Europeans no longer have their hands on their throats.
Russian lead delegate Mikhail Ulyanov, who's been in frequent meetings with the American team led by Robert Malley, recently tweeted, "It's time to learn the lessons from the failed maximum pressure policy of the Trump administration." Iran says although there's been significant progress on technical matters, differences, including those in the area of sanctions lifting, require political decisions mainly by the Americans that, if made, can lead to a durable agreement within a short period of time. Homolitsky, Vienna.
Is the British Home Office abusing its powers by denying a former Guantanamo Bay detainee his citizenship rights? That is the accusation being made by Cage's outreach director Moazzam Begg, who announced he's taking legal action in the hope of winning back his passport.
I've been arrested under terrorism laws three times, and I've had my passport taken away three times, all without any due process, all without any access to legal recourse, and all by governments of Britain, both Labour and Conservative, and yet I have not been convicted of any crime, I've never had my day in court, and I have actually been declared innocent by the very police that arrested me in the first place.
Moazzam is a British human rights defender who was made famous when he was detained and tortured by the US in Afghanistan's notorious Bagram prison and Guantanamo Bay between 2002 to 2005. Ever since his return to the UK, Mr. Begg's passport has been seized three times in just 8 years, the latest being in September 2021.
I gave evidence at war crimes tribunals. I've given evidence to the International Criminal Court for Britain and America's role in torture and abuse there. And I've looked at Britain and America's role in the rendition program with countries they claim not to have good relations with. And that, I believe, has been one of the key reasons why I have been targeted.
Begg has been accused of support for extremist groups in the past over his aid and investigative work in war zones such as Syria and Afghanistan, but was always found to be innocent. The Home Office has yet to publicly comment on this latest passport matter.
This battle will be very significant, especially given the fact that Number 10 is currently trying to gift itself new powers to essentially remove people's citizenship at will with the controversial Nationality and Borders Bill. Many critics fear that the government just simply can't be trusted to wield powers like this fairly. Robert Carter, London.
It's been 1 year since U.S. President Joe Biden took office after defeating his contender Donald Trump in the 2020 presidential election. He took charge of the Oval Office with lots of promises, but let's look at where he's standing after 365 days. For one thing, Biden promised to bring the coronavirus pandemic in the country under control after Trump failed to do so. At the moment, the United States continues to be the world's worst hit country by COVID-19, with more than 68 million cases and over 858,000 deaths. Infections in the past weeks have been jumping, reaching an average of over 800,000 cases a day. This is while, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, only 63% of the American population is fully vaccinated, and the numbers in southern states are much lower.
Look, folks, we're going to bring the Republicans and Democrats together and deliver economic relief for working families and schools and businesses.
These were Biden's words when he promised to get bipartisan cooperation to boost the U.S. economy and support the working class as, quote, the backbone of the society. Now we see that rift has not only widened between the two parties, but even the Democrats are divided over the issue, as some criticize Biden for not being bold or progressive enough with his agenda. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders says Democrats are on the wrong path and need to make a major course correction, pivoting back toward the needs of working Americans. Sanders believes that in too many ways, the Democratic Party has turned its back on the working class. Turning to foreign policy, Biden said last February that the U.S. would step up diplomacy to end the war in Yemen.
We're also stepping up our diplomacy to end the war in Yemen, a war which has created a humanitarian and strategic catastrophe.
But it looks like he couldn't keep that promise either. In December, the Senate supported Biden's $650 billion weapons sales to Saudi Arabia, even though Riyadh continues to target Yemeni civilians with airstrikes on an almost daily basis. Tensions between the United States and Russia have also escalated under Biden's presidency, especially more recently over Ukraine, with both Moscow and Washington targeting each other with tit-for-tat sanctions, while warning against a complete rupture in their relations. And regarding the 2015 deal between Iran and the P5 plus one group of countries, Biden had this to say back in 2020, that his predecessor Trump had recklessly ditched the agreement, pledging that the U.S. would rejoin the deal under his presidency. But the Biden administration has been keeping the so-called maximum pressure campaign on Iran in place and has even imposed more sanctions against many entities and individuals, showing no serious intention in getting back into that agreement. The latest polls suggest that Biden is entering his second year in office with the worst job approval rating yet, affected by the COVID chaos, the messy and deadly U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan in late August. Biden's approval ratings started relatively strong at 57%, but by September they plunged to 43%. A new poll by Gallup and Morning Consult finds only 40% of U.S. adults currently approve of the job he is doing, his lowest to date. All in all, in the eyes of both Americans and the world, Biden has had a very disappointing record for his first year in office.
Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi made an official visit to Moscow on Wednesday at the invitation of his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin. This is the first trip to Russia by an Iranian president since 2017. During a meeting in the Kremlin, the two sides set for talks on mutual and regional issues.
We have no limitation for expansion and development of ties with Russia and are after establishment of strategic relations with Moscow. We can expand our relations in economy, trade on the political track. We are not talking about momentary relations. We are talking about a sustainable and strategic relationship.
For his part, the Russian president said Iran-Russia's relations have been constantly improving. He also acknowledged Tehran and Moscow's contribution to Syria's transition past the terrorist threats.
Thanks to our efforts, we have largely succeeded in helping the Syrian government overcome the threats posed by international terrorism. Now, of course, both you and us are concerned about the situation that is developing in Afghanistan. I would like to discuss all these issues with you to know your position on these problems. And of course, it is very important for me to know your position on the JCPOA.
Iran's Raisi underlined that his country will never give in to the West's pressure, including the U.S., adding that Iran is seeking to remove the U.S. illegal and unilateral sanctions.
We have been confronting the U.S. for more than 40 years. We hope that these efforts would lead to removal of the sanctions. The threat of sanctions cannot come in the way of Iran's progress.
Ahead of the visit of Iran's Raisi to Moscow, Iranian Foreign Minister Hussein Amir Abdollahian said that his country followed a new roadmap to deepen ties with Moscow, adding that Iran and Russia were determined to update a 20-year cooperation treaty that they signed in 2001.
This is Iranian President's third foreign trip since taking office in July last year. The visit is seen by observers as the latest efforts by Iran and Russia to cement stronger ties amid U.S. hostile policies towards both countries. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Bahrain has a tiny population of 1.7 million, but boasts the highest prison population per capita. Thousands of those are political prisoners. Every family has members who have done time, and the stories of torture and abuse are harrowing.
Human rights organizations and defenders have been documenting them for years.
There is multiple evidence of torture for against both men and women who have been politically outspoken. And there are people who have been languishing in prison for 10 years now. Children who have had their teeth knocked out, they have been raped, they have had their genitals connected to electrical shock devices, car batteries or whatever, and have been driven around the villages, told that they would have their mothers or their sisters raped and violated if they did not snitch on their friends or the fellow villagers who would have been involved in the nightly protests against the continued abuse of fellow prisoners.
But this man, Omar Al-Hassan, the chairman of the Persian Gulf Center for Strategic Studies, has accused UK MPs and peers of making biased and fabricated criticisms of Bahrain. The kingdom's rulers are squirming in the wake of more and more criticism coming from Britain.
My lords, earlier this year I raised with the noble lord, Lord Ahmed, the detention of children in Bahrain following reports of their physical abuse and forced confessions.
My lords, a year ago this week, the Bahrain's courts upheld the death penalty for Mohammed Ramadan and Hussein Musa, following commitments made to do so in the other place by the Minister for the Middle East and North Africa. What representations has Her Majesty's government made to the government of Bahrain on the death penalty?
The GCSS says Bahrain's interventions show, quote, ignorance and disregard for the many achievements Bahrain has made and is proud of in terms of human rights. But the UK seems unfazed by this. The GCSS is notorious for defending Bahrain's human rights record, and its chairman, Omar Al-Hassan, stands accused of being in the pocket of the Bahraini embassy in the UK. According to Liberal Democrat Pierre Lord Scriven, the GCSS's claims are nothing more than a continuation of the amateurish and slapdash approach by the Bahraini authorities to try and deny their appalling human rights record and undermine or try to silence those of us who speak up. Nonetheless, the UK and Bahrain are strategic allies, and the UK is reluctant to turn words into actions when it comes to defending Bahrain's prisoners of conscience. This is just another example of the hypocrisy and double standards exercised by Western governments that benefit from maintaining the status quo. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The right to assemble, to demonstrate, to be heard, a cornerstone of democracy, potentially under threat in proposed UK government legislation that gives the police sweeping new powers.
It does actually, in their opinion, violate civil liberties, existing civil liberties of society. And of course, with the backdrop of COVID and the draconian measures, and on the back of 20 years of increased police powers after the anti-terrorism laws, etc., that have come in to counter terrorism, there's a sort of nervousness.
And here is why it matters. Women being manhandled and handcuffed by police for attending a peaceful vigil held last year in the wake of 33-year-old Sarah Everard's murder at the hands of a police officer.
While the Conservative government claims the bill is aimed at proactively preventing chaos and disruption caused, for example, by people who glue their faces to motorways, its critics say the bill is not about law and order, but about taking away their right to protest.
The proposed legislation was quickly pushed through the House of Commons last year. This week it was put up for debate at the upper chamber of the UK Parliament amid cries of kill the bill from drum-beating protesters, forming an emotive backdrop to it outside the legislative body. What ensued was several amendments made to the proposed legislation to the chagrin of the government.
There is a general trend for government to grab more and more power and to reduce civil liberties. This is what's worrying. I think that the Lords ultimately, as you say, won't be able to stop it entirely. They can slow the process down, water it down slightly. But if governments are inexorably marching towards a greater totalitarian orientated set of legislature, then I'm afraid that at the moment, with the climate the way it is, politically, economically, etc., I don't think it'll be terribly difficult for them to push it through.
Campaigners say the parliamentary defeat came because people took to the streets and raised the alarm about the government's growing authoritarianism. They say it is now time to build the movement and kill the contentious bill once and for all. Sahipur is up, London.
Islamic and national forces in the Gaza Strip held a demonstration in front of the Red Cross headquarters in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners held under administrative detention in Israeli jails. The protest comes as hundreds of inmates have already boycotted Israel's military court, demanding an end to its illegal administrative detention. About 500 administrative detainees began the new year by refusing to show up for their court sessions.
Israeli regime has renewed administrative detention against hundreds of Palestinian inmates. Palestinians and human rights groups should do their best to put an end to the cruel policy. We stand by our brothers in Israeli jails who have boycotted Israel's military court. We also call on international human rights organizations to take a serious action.
The boycott of Israel's military court by Palestinian inmates comes as the health of the Palestinian hunger striker Nasser Abu Hamed is deteriorating. He has been in a coma for 11 days while in custody. Palestinian factions say the intentional medical negligence practiced by Israeli regime aims at killing the Palestinian prisoners.
Our message is clear. We will always support our detainees who stand against the brutal policies of the Israeli regime. Our brother Nasser Abu Hamed is in coma for 11 days due to medical negligence as Israel refuses to release him to provide him with proper medication. This amounts to a criminal act against our prisoners.
Public protests are mounting day by day against Israel's decision not to release Nasser Abu Hamed. Palestinians say they will hold Israel accountable if the inmate dies. About 500 Palestinian detainees are refusing to show up for their court sessions, saying that this move is aimed at putting an end to the illegal Israeli administrative detention policy. They are also demanding the release of the hunger-striking prisoner Nasser Abu Hamed, who's on the verge of death. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
Strikes, protests, and parliamentary disunity have shown that opposition to President Emmanuel Macron's pandemic policies have reached unprecedented levels. Macron dominates his party, and his party dominates Parliament. But France's controversial new vaccine smart pass was only just approved after more than 2 weeks of parliamentary chaos. It's one of the strictest vaccine passes in the world because it requires full vaccination. The vaccine hesitant can no longer provide proof of a negative COVID test to avoid almost total public isolation. There have been weeks of protests in favor of the rights of the non-vaccinated, and unions are planning enormous walkouts against a pandemic response which is accused of being imposed from above and without enough grassroots input.
In the end, it was Macron who decided alone, and that's why it's a bit confused for everyone. So, and that's why it makes a lot of confusion in the population, because just one guy who decides everything and a scientific committee who is more a justification for the decision that has been taken.
Vaccines in France are popular. 80% of the formerly vaccine-skeptical nation is now fully vaccinated. That has many saying that seemingly scapegoating the unvaccinated is a way for Macron to solidify a precarious re-election bid.
Despite his immensely controversial tenure, Macron retains a hardcore base of support of around 20%. It's been long assumed that it will be enough to get him into the second round, where he will defeat a challenger from the far right, like in 2017.
The decision is are very influenced by the fact that the election are coming in April. So it's really difficult to go to the mandatory vaccination for Emmanuel Macron. Maybe he want to wait for his re-election to go from the vaccinal pass to the mandatory vaccination.
The vaccine pass will likely be contested in France's top court, but it is expected to go into effect this week. The Omicron variant is far less deadly than previous versions, giving hope that the pandemic is ending. But it appears that the nation's pandemic policies will be a major part of the presidential election this April. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
This is Foresight. A program on how to worship Allah.
Allah, 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 Allah.
Today's tip: what are the secrets when it comes to our tongue and our hearts being in sync in the ubudiyah and the servitude and worship of Allah?
Allahu Rabbi, la sharika lahu.
So, dear listeners, we are talking about the aspects of the heart and the tongue and tranquility when it comes to these two, in order to increase and enhance and strengthen our ubudiyah, strengthen our worship of Allah, our servitude of Allah. Now, when talking about the aspects of the heart and the tongue, we find that the tongue, just like any other body part of a human being, if it is not controlled, it will go wild and unrestrained. And of course, as you all know, something that is wild and unrestrained is not something which is good. And so in this manner, we find that, for example, an unrestrained hand will cause oppression. It will hit people. It will harm people. Likewise, an unrestrained mind will cause harm to people. It will cause oppression and injustice. And one of the easiest things by which one can cause oppression and can hurt people and can damage people's lives is one's tongue. Truly, one's tongue is something that is very easily uncontrollable, and if it goes out of control, it can cause great damage. And so along these lines, we find that the spiritual masters, the urafa, they tell us that at the beginning, before the tongue learns to speak, this is of course on the spiritual wayfaring, the suluk, before the tongue starts to speak. Now, this isn't talking about a small child learns to speak, but when the tongue starts to learn to speak the beautiful azkar, the dhikr, the remembrances, the incantations of Allah, before the tongue learns to speak, the salik, the spiritual wayfarer, on this way to perfection, has to teach and instruct the tongue. And so one of the ways which we have talked about in previous episodes is the tasbih of Lady Fatima Zahra alayha salam. And this tasbih, which is 34 times Allahu Akbar, 33 times Alhamdulillah, and 33 times Subhanallah, this is how you teach the tongue to constantly be in remembrance of the Almighty Allah. And so for segment number one, I think this is a good place to pause. Of course, the tongue needs to be taught and needs to be instructed via supplications and a different dhikr in order to start to purify it so that we move on towards the dhikr and the speaking of the heart.
Ya Allah, Ya Allah, Ya Allah, Ya Mannan.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Ya Allah, Ya Rahman, haqqiq amanina, waffiqna fi kulli an fi ma sa'ina. Ya Allah, Ya Mannan, haqqiq amanina. أجب دعائي يا رجائي بالرضا والخير أنير طريقي مع
صديقي باحترامي نظيف.
Dear listeners of the program Foresight, my name is Muhammad. Today, I'm going to read to you the English translation of an excerpt from Munajatul Arifin. Please stay with me.
أنا العبد الفقير وأنا أعيش وصاحب القلق
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. My God, how agreeable for hearts are the thoughts inspiring your remembrance. How sweet traveling to you through imagination upon the roads of the unseen worlds. How pleasant the taste of your love. How delightful the drink of your nearness. So give us refuge from your casting out and you sending far, and place us among the most elect of your knowers, the most righteous of your servants, the most truthful of your obeyers, the most sincere of your worshippers. O Almighty, O Majestic, O Generous, O Endower, by your mercy and kindness, O most merciful of the merciful.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. Now, in continuation, we were saying how the tongue first needs to be taught how to speak the language of Allah, speak the language of spirituality. Of course, if we do not restrain and control our tongue, it will go wild and unrestrained, and in a condition where the tongue becomes wild and unrestrained, it will surely cause damage to ourselves and to those around us. Now, we said that we need to instruct and teach the tongue how to speak the language of a salik, of a spiritual wayfarer. Of course, that is by limiting our speech to that which is good. Of course, this is one of the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. If you have not something good to say, then remain silent. But if you do have something good to say, then of course say so. And one of the best things to do is the remembrance of Allah, the stating of, for example, the kalima, La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah, or for example, the tasbih of Hazrat Fatima, Lady Zahra, alayha salam, right? 34 times Allahu Akbar, 33 times Alhamdulillah, 33 times Subhanallah. For example, du'as, supplications, such as the supplication of Kumail, du'a-e Kumail, which is recited on Thursdays, du'a-e Tawassul, which is also recited on a weekly basis, the different ziyarats, ziyarat-e Ashura, ziyarat-e Waritha, ziyarat-e Aminullah. These are different things which we can recite that will teach the tongue and instruct the tongue to remain on the path of spirituality and perfection. Of course, once the tongue begins to be trained, then slowly we need to move on towards our heart and really feel and understand and try to fathom and comprehend what it is that we are saying in the depths of our hearts. Now, as we had begun the program, of course, the heart and the tongue, the two aspects which lead us towards an enhanced and strengthened ubudiyya, but it must be done in tranquility and calmness. It is in tranquility and quietude and the peace of the heart and the peace of the mind and the calmness of the mind and the heart and really of the soul, which leads us to a profound understanding and a deeper impact of these things which we are reciting. Of course, the supplications and the ziyarat and the different recitations and the du'as, they are enhanced when our heart and our mind and our soul is tranquil and calm. And eventually what happens is that the heart finds its own tongue, and the heart becomes the qibla, the focus of attraction. No longer is the physical movement of the tongue the main thing we are trying to accomplish. Rather, it is the heart that begins to speak and recite these du'as and these supplications and these different azkar. And eventually the other organs of the body will follow, up to a point where, when one starts the supplications and one starts the recitations and one starts to speak in this language of spirituality, of the love of Allah, the whole of the kingdom of human existence and even all of existence comes and becomes a supplicant with this kind of an individual. And of course, we have heard that the spiritual masters, those that are the awliya of Allah, they are close and near to Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted. When they begin to say some sort of adhkar, or they do a supplication, or they do their salah, their namaz, their daily prayers, it is as if everything around them is also reciting the supplication. And so, dear friends, the secret of the tongue and the heart and it being calm and tranquil in the enhancement and strengthening of our ubudiyya, our servitude and our worship to Allah.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
And now we invite you to listen to Brother Nu'man Ali Khan.
The corrupt word, ba'd al-iman, after you have iman. What does al-ismul fusuq mean? A single word that can be offensive to someone is a horrible thing for anyone who has iman. In other words, filthy language out of your mouth and faith inside your heart cannot coexist. You cannot have iman in your heart, which has been beautified, زَيَّنَهُ فِي قُلُوبِكُمْ, and ugly words come out of your mouth. If you have no control over, you know, whatever four-letter words you keep using every time you get frustrated, there's a spiritual problem. It's not just a habit problem. It is a spiritual problem. The other side of that equation from the same ayah is actually, how can you use a terrible word for anyone who has iman? Anybody who has iman, you cannot use terrible words for them anymore. You can't use bad words for them anymore. Corrupt words are no longer allowed for another Muslim. It's just not allowed. بِئْسَ الْإِسْمُ الْفُسُوقُ بَعْدَ الْإِيمَانِ وَمَنْ لَمْ يَتُوبْ فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الظَّالِمُونَ. And people who don't want to give it up, people who don't want to repent, and those are the wrongdoers. I wanted to highlight and dedicate this entire khutbah to this one ayah for a simple reason. In our minds, there are some things that are really important in Islam. Prayer is important in Islam. You know, charity is important in Islam. We have an idea of what is really, really a big deal in Islam. But you know what I'd like to share with you? The things that Allah makes into a big deal in the Quran are a big deal in Islam. This is a big deal. There's a lot of time and ayah dedicated to this subject, which means it's not a small matter to Allah. It is not a small matter to Allah. And the way that it's been, the continuum, this is the, you know, where it's placed is so remarkable. In the beginning of this, you know, was the love of the Messenger, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Then Allah talked about the most terrible thing. What if it happens that Muslims are fighting and killing each other? how should you make peace between them? That was the second subject of the surah. And the third subject of the surah is don't make fun of each other. Why is that the third subject? Because when you make fun of each other, hatred will grow among you. And if it gets out of hand, eventually you'll be killing each other. It's already happening. Why do people kill each other? Why do Muslims kill each other? It starts with them thinking of the other race, the other ethnicity, the other village, the other tribe as inferior, as corrupt, as ignorant, as something else. And eventually you can have policies that are driven by that kind of bias. And those policies, when they get enough out of hand, it can lead to entire conflict between Muslims. That all began with them making fun of each other. So Allah identifies the root of the problem.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Ya fuadi, da'asi wallah, fawidil amra lillahi lillah, kul wa nadi, hasbi Allah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Whistleblower Everett Stern, who talked to the 6th of January panel, said FBI agents and the House panel investigating the 6th of January attack on the Capitol have both learned of a plan by allies of retired Army General Michael Flynn to gather intelligence on top U.S. Republicans to move them to back election audits in key states that Donald Trump lost. We now present you an article written by Peter Stone. The piece is titled, Michael Flynn Allies Plotted to Lean on U.S. Republicans to Back Vote Audits. Whistleblower Everett Stern, who talked to the 6th of January panel, said FBI agents and the House panel investigating the 6th of January attack on the Capitol have both learned of a plan by allies of retired Army General Michael Flynn to gather intelligence on top Republicans to move them to back election audits in key states that Donald Trump lost. Everett Stern, who runs the intelligence firm Tactical Rabbit, and is a Republican vying for a Senate seat in Pennsylvania, in multiple interviews with The Guardian, said two Flynn associates with the right-wing Patriot Caucus group enlisted his help in April in a scheme to seek potentially damaging information on two Republican members of Congress to prod them to back an audit of the 2020 presidential election that Joe Biden won. Everett Stern told The Guardian he spent several hours in November telling House panel investigators about the drive by Michael Flynn associates who sought campaign finance and other dirt on Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey and Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick to win their support for an audit to bolster Donald Trump's debunked charges that Joe Biden's win was fraudulent. A long-shot candidate to succeed the retiring Pat Toomey, Everett Stern said he alerted the FBI in June when he heard more details of the bizarre drive by Michael Flynn allies to specifically target the two Republicans, both of whom backed impeaching Trump after the 6th of January insurrection. The efforts by Michael Flynn's Patriot Caucus allies were launched after Donald Trump failed to block Joe Biden from taking office and are part of a wider drive by Trump loyalists and Michael Flynn to help boost Trump's political fortunes via more state audits nationwide into charges that Biden's win was rigged and elect like-minded candidates in key states to top electoral offices. Everett Stern provided text messages, emails, and other documents revealing he had multiple contacts with one of the Patriot Caucus members, Velma Ann Ruth, and two other influential Flynn allies, Houston real estate mogul Al Hartman and former Army Green Beret Ivan Raiklin, who were pushing audits in several key states. Everett Stern said Michael Flynn's Patriot Caucus associates first approached him in Pennsylvania for possible help after an April Republican Party event, and soon after told Stern in phone calls they worked with Michael Flynn and the Patriot Caucus and planned to recruit former domestic and foreign intelligence officials to facilitate their scheme. Planned by Michael Flynn allies alarmed Everett Stern, but as a former whistleblower involved in exposing a large bank money laundering scandal by HSBC in 2012, he told The Guardian he decided to play along for a few months to glean information to expose the Trump allies' scheme. Everett Stern expressed dismay that Flynn's Patriot Caucus associates don't understand that Biden is the president. They wanted to collect information through Tactical Rabbit and my campaign to turn up the heat on Pat Toomey and Fitzpatrick to back an audit which Stern viewed as potentially extortion. Everett Stern gave The Guardian a voicemail he received in which Al Hartman talked about leaning on moderate Republican rhinos in Pennsylvania to gain support for an audit of that state's vote, with Joe Biden won by over 80,000 votes, and Al Hartman said a similar drive in Michigan was needed. Everett Stern said Al Hartman wanted to use Tactical Rabbit's intelligence gathering tools and his campaign to dig up potentially embarrassing campaign finance information and other dirt about the Pennsylvania members, plus Republican political figures in Michigan who were also resisting audits. Everett Stern said Al Hartman and Raiklin also talked with Stern about meeting Flynn, Trump's disgraced former national security advisor, and proposed compensating him for his information via campaign donations. In an April exchange of Al Hartman text messages seen by The Guardian, Al Hartman asked a Michael Flynn scheduler to help connect Flynn with Everett Stern, whose Senate campaign and credentials he touted highly, calling Stern a strong believer in their cause. Although Everett Stern tipped off the FBI in June about what he deemed a threat to national security, and he said he met with agents again in November, it's not clear if his charges are still being pursued. Everett Stern's charges have echoes of Michael Flynn's scheming with Donald Trump and other loyalists in late 2020 to thwart Joe Biden's win. Efforts that included a White House meeting with Trump where Michael Flynn proposed declaring martial law in several states that Joe Biden won and then rerunning the election in those states. According to an Arizona Senate document shared by the watchdog group American Oversight to coordinate national efforts, Raiklin and Hartman on 3rd of July spearheaded one of a series of election integrity calls with Trump loyalists, lawyers, and donors to discuss the status of audit efforts in several states and other plans to cast doubt on Joe Biden's win. The Arizona document reads, Join us every second Saturday for situation updates and collaboration from active leaders in the election remediation process at state level. Attorneys with Mike Lindell and Patrick Byrne, data analysts, state legislators, gubernatorial candidates, and grassroots activists whose goal is completing a cyber forensic audit in their state. A who's who list of Trump loyalists and groups invited to join these calls included the America Project and America's Future, both of which Michael Flynn played key roles with as they poured some $2 million into a discredited audit of Arizona's largest county. Plus the Patriot Caucus, Velma Ann Ruth, Fincham and Byrne, the millionaire chief financier of the Arizona audit. Al Hartman, in emails with Everett Stern obtained by The Guardian, invited him in June to attend a religious far-right meeting known as Ziklag in Dallas, Texas, where he could meet separately with Michael Flynn. Everett Stern said Al Hartman told him a private meeting was going to be arranged with Michael Flynn, who Stern was told wanted to meet him. After indicating to Al Hartman he would attend, Everett Stern opted to cancel at the last minute, after his lawyer indicated there could be legal repercussions from such a meeting. Al Hartman has long been a donor to the right. He is on the advisory council for the pro-Trump Turning Point USA and has been active in the conservative donor network led by oil billionaire Charles Koch. According to a military official who spoke to the Reuters news agency recently, Ray Klin, an Army Reserve officer who reportedly has known Michael Flynn since 2014, is facing an internal Army Reserve investigation into possible violations of rules barring partisan political activity. Reuters has reported Ray Klin in December of 2020 outlined a wild scheme in tweets and a podcast to thwart Joe Biden's win, charging a vast conspiracy theory that included Pence, intelligence, China, and big tech. Ray Klin told Donald Trump to activate the emergency broadcast system and deployed the hashtag #FightLikeAFlynn, stressing that we the people are going to force this plan on them. Neither Al Hartman or Ray Klin replied to multiple calls seeking comment. A Flynn scheduler did not respond to questions for the story. Velma Ann Ruth, with the Patriot Caucus, who was photographed with Everett Stern at a June event in Pennsylvania, said General Michael Flynn called Stern's charges delusional, fabricated, and defamatory. In a text message, Everett Stern said he shared the photo and other documents involving exchanges he had with Velma Ann Ruth with the FBI. Senior former prosecutors and intelligence officials say Everett Stern's charges merit law enforcement attention. Former prosecutor Paul Rosenzweig, who worked on Ken Starr's team during the impeachment of Bill Clinton, said Everett Stern's charges suggest serious crimes. If his allegations were corroborated by extrinsic evidence, they clearly would warrant an investigation.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Brothers and sisters, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of The Lantern. How many times in life have you had an opportunity knock on your door, and then forever the reason you took too long to answer that door, and that opportunity went away because it probably thought no one was home? How many times has that happened in your life? I know it's happened in my life often because I took too long to respond to that opportunity, whether it was because of anxiety, whether it was because I was too distracted with other things. Those things could have been important, those things could have been unimportant, whatever. But the point is, an opportunity was presented, a door was opened, and then I neglected it and whooshed, it went away. Do you guys like fish, by the way? It might sound at first that it's got nothing to do with opportunities, but once you listen to the story we have in store, you'll change your mind. We'll be right back.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear friends, we have a nice story for this part. Thank you very much for listening to Lantern, Two Fishermen. One day the two fishermen were fishing in a nearby pond. Both of them were looking forward to have a fresh fish afterwards. They both have packed utensils, cooking accessories, ingredients, and fishing equipment. Once they arrived at the pond, they chose to sit at a distance to hunt for fishes. The first fisherman caught a big and beautiful fish within a few minutes. He was very happy. He then placed the fish in the icebox to retain its freshness. He would cook it whole fish in the noon. He caught a few more other small fishes after a while. He froze a few fishes to take it back home. After about an hour of fishing, the first fisherman offered to help the second fisherman. The second fisherman politely declined, and then the second fisherman also caught a large fish. Surprisingly, he threw it back into the pond. The first man was bewildered by his act. He remained silent as he watched the second man captured many big fishes only to have them thrown back into the water. The first fisherman, annoyed by this act, retorted, "Why are you throwing the fishes back into the water? They were beautiful and big." The second fisherman replied, "I know they were big, but I don't have a big pan to cook the big fishes, so I'm looking for a smaller fish that fits my cooking pan." The first fisherman was startled by the response. He advised the second fisherman to cut the big fish into pieces to fit them into the small pan. Yeah, many of us are just like the second fisherman. We tend to overlook a handful of opportunities, chances, and even fortune that come in our way because we are too stubbornly looking for what we want. We need to learn to capture every opportunity and work it out so that it will fit into our lives perfectly. Most do not understand the wonderful opportunities life gives until they are looking back. The sentence was from Eric Handler.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Yeah, so, okay, I don't know what the deal with the fisherman was and why exactly he didn't just cut the fish. But even if it wasn't, cutting the fish wasn't an option to him for whatever the reason, I really do believe in the saying that when there's a will, there's a way. In fact, it's not just an idiom, it's a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam too. His Eminence says, when there's strong will, no body, not a single body is too weak. A lot of people overcome deadly diseases, fight cancer and horrific infections and viruses and illnesses that I've never even heard of until I heard of that strong-willed person. They fight it off and they power through it like an absolute boss through the strength of their willpower, through the strength of their heart. And vice versa, a lot of people have entirely able, healthy, otherwise bodies, but their mind and their heart has given up on life, on trying, on being alive, on them. And they can't even do the simplest tasks, like getting out of bed anymore. The human mind, the human brain, is a really, really complex yet scary thing. On one hand, it's totally under our control and it does whatever we teach it and train it to do. But on the other hand, when it breaks and it falls apart, it can seriously mess someone up. But the point is, when there's a will, there's a way. If that fisherman really, really wanted to keep those fish for himself, he could have, you know, put it in an ice box or asked the other fisherman if he could store it for him, and he could have taken them home and froze them or taken them to the market and sold them. There's always an option. And surely enough, that option is never giving up. Never tossing up our hands and saying, well, yeah, we're done. You know, it's over. Like, we're totally stuffed and there's nothing we can do about this. That is never an option. We can never say that, okay, I give up. Giving up is never an option when we are faced with trials and adversities in life, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said himself in the Quran that I never test a servant with more than they can handle. So there are a lot of misinterpretations of this verse that they're interpreted, it's interpreted as us being able to just back down from a battle, from a mission, from a task, the moment we feel we're not up to it, because, well, God doesn't expect it from me. He said himself, I won't burden you with what you can't handle. It means quite the opposite, actually. It means, look, if I assign this mission to you, if I've assigned this burden to you, then it means you can handle it. It means I believed in you enough to throw this at you. And I'm pretty sure you are able to hit the ball out of the court if you just focus and keep strong and don't lose momentum and keep your eyes on the prize. I'm sure you've all heard the hadith, and at least on this show, because we've talked about it so many times, where Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam says, the opportunities in life, seize them, for they are like clouds. You know, clouds, their passing is totally soundless and seamless. You don't hear, you don't notice the passing of clouds in the sky. Imagine how chaotic it would be if clouds rumbled and rattled as they moved across the sky above our heads. But they don't. They're totally quiet and graceful, slowly but surely fluttering through the blue sky and then just turning into rain. No cloud is ever the same cloud. And that is the case with the opportunities in life as well. If we lose sight of them and we tell ourselves that, yeah, it's always going to be there, before we know it, we'll raise our head and we'll see that that floof of cloud we had been watching 2 minutes ago is gone. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah.
ألا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
www.parstoday.com/en